hunting for that magical genie with piles of cash? Join Candace and her guests as they uncover financial secrets, have a laugh at past mistakes, and savor financial rebounds. Thank you for listening. Let's dive in and do something today that your future self will thank you for.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Money Flow Genie podcast. I'm so excited to have Vesica Poulin here. I am so excited to have her here. She is an immigrant from Bulgaria and escaped, basically escaped the Iron Curtain to come here, leveraging education, which is, you don't hear people saying that often, to move themselves forward. We always think of education now because of the cost, that it's not worth it. But you have done so much for yourself in the time that you've come here. And I want you to introducing yourself with who you are and what you do now.
First of all, thank you so much for having me as a guest, Candy. I'm really honored to be here and look forward to our discussion. But very briefly, yes, I'm Vesica Poulin, originally from Bulgaria, an immigrant who had the desire to live the American dream, and feel very grateful that I was able to make it happen. And for me, how that happened was through education. Being able to earn a full scholarship was really the only way I could afford to go to school here. So I focused a lot on academics and grateful for all the opportunities I had to be here. So I arrived in the US many, many moons ago. This is home for me now. But like everyone else, I followed the traditional path of going to school, getting a corporate job, and climbing that corporate ladder. And I did that for many years until a few events of adversity caused me to realize that I was perhaps climbing the wrong ladder. And they didn't all come at once, but I finally got the message. Like global market events that left a lot of people without jobs or with decimated retirement plans. My own employer going through a number of restructures and seeing very dear colleagues of mine being let go for no reason other than to cut costs. It wasn't a reflection of how smart, talented they were, or how dedicated to the firm they were. And last but not least, also when I looked up the ladder, all I saw was trading time for money. The higher you went up that corporate ladder, the more was expected of you in terms of sharing your time and being away from family and loved ones. And it struck me, it's not the future I envisioned. I never really felt like I was getting caught up. And the higher you climb, the further behind I felt. And I also didn't want to be in a situation where, God forbid, I'm a 60 or 65 and I'm let go, or God forbid, the market crashes and I have no other option. So that's really what started my real estate journey. And it started with a single family home that was really intended to be my small retirement nest egg and a safety net, but that worked out well. And I grew the portfolio over a number of years and the light bulb went on. And I thought, wow, this is not really just a small retirement nest egg. That could be something bigger. And so I started continued to build my portfolio on the side, eventually transitioning from single family homes to apartments. And now I have the privilege to do that full time. So it was a long winded journey, lots of turns and twists, but I took the lessons at every turn and twist. And that's where I'm at today. And now I have the privilege of working with other high achieving professionals or business owners who are looking to create that optionality, and I can share my experience with them and make them part of the journey.
Oh my gosh, I could not have done that justice. Thank you so much for doing that. That's fantastic. So before we start into the meat of, you know, the how-tos and in and out of your journey, the part of the podcast, we have the self-praise showcase, and that is, we're not really taught to brag about ourselves. You know, it's like taboo. And it's a really important thing to be able to know where we've been and where we are now, so they don't get caught up in that whole social media comparison. We never know what's really happening on the inside. We only can see on the outside. And that's really easy to get caught up and feel just like we're not moving anywhere. So Tell us, if you don't mind, so we can hold for you and then our listeners can hold something for themselves. What is something that you're really proud of yourself for, whether it's a large achievement or something that's just really small that just recently happened?
Yeah, the thing that comes to mind is becoming a real estate entrepreneur with a desire and heart to serve and help others. Just jumping in entrepreneurship was not easy, especially having been in the corporate world for so many years. But I saw an opportunity to help others in a number of different ways, not just investing in real estate, but also helping new investors to the space be more empowered and better educated so they can make savvy investment decisions and hopefully avoid losses. So that's what prompted me to build a course on underwriting. And I built that from scratch, not knowing how to put together a course or anything like that. And now it has grown. But what gives me really most joy is that I can see the impact that I'm making by when I see my students succeed and underwrite deals from start to finish. They're now slaying deals on their own using the knowledge that and the skills that I've shared with them throughout the course. So that really makes me proud. Their success makes me proud because I can see the impact that I can now make as an entrepreneur.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. And one of the reasons why I really was excited to have you on the podcast is because everything that you do and everything you just shared, it just shows how much that you've come here for yourself and then you've got that knowledge and now you just want to spread it and share and help others. It just with what you've experienced, to help others do less of the unpleasant experiences, so to speak. I really admire that within you to do that. And I can tell you that a lot of people don't, they don't understand how to really even look at a single family home. That when people talk about, oh, the 1% rule, you're in the red with the 1% rule. You have to consider all of the expenses, everything, and you want to make cash flow above everything. Now multiply that times how many doors you have in a multifamily and how things shift and the lending is different. There's so many things in that. Wow, that's a really great tool for people to be able to look at so that when we get these offerings in our inboxes, we can glance at it. Once we have an understanding, we can glance at it and go, that might be a little bit too high of a return there. So that's fantastic. We will definitely have in the show notes and on my website where they'll be able to reach out to you and links to your platform and everything. That's fantastic. So let's go back a little bit. So you came here with the education. When you came here for the with the education and the scholarship, what was your major? What were you coming to do when you came to the US?
Yeah, so I majored in finance and international business. I naturally tend to gravitate to math and numbers, and my godmother was actually a banker. So initially, I was my goal or my dream was to become a banker. That's not how I started. I started in business analytics, marketing, and sales, and eventually I made my way into banking. So I guess I came back to my core dream or what I originally intended to do. But yes, finance and international business was my undergrad, and then I also have an MBA, and that was in finance as well.
Wow. And so when you did that, you from there you went straight into corporate. Did you were you an intern? Like, tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so I did a couple of internships when I was an undergraduate student. Again, coming to the country, I didn't necessarily have prior work experience. Maybe I had one back in Bulgaria, but I quickly realized that is not really going to count here. You really have to have the local knowledge and expertise. So I did actually a couple of internships while I was in college. So every summer I would apply. There was actually an extended one that required me to take a semester off and move to Dallas, and I took that opportunity again with the goal of building my resume so I can be more marketable and more employable. So when I graduated, there was an opportunity to join one of the largest consumer goods companies. It's Nestle. A lot of people maybe familiar with it, and work on their Walmart account and later on the Sam's Club account business. So that was invaluable experience that I gained. I realized this is not what I wanted to do 20 years from now. So that caused me to take a step back, go back to school. That's when I earned my MBA and was able to shift my career into commercial lending or commercial banking. So I did that for 15 plus years.
Wow. Well, that explains, I just have to say, look at the expertise now that we've got here with your underwriting tool. It's not like you're just like, oh, I'm just going to make this thing up. You've got some serious understanding of exactly how these numbers work. That's fantastic. So you went from there and you bought your first single family home as an investment. How did you choose that?
Great question. So I, when you have that burning desire and you put it out in the universe and it comes to you. So it was a combination of that as well as I reflect on it, growing back in Bulgaria, when we talked about investments, we really referred to hard assets because at the time there wasn't really a developed stock market or equities market. So when people talked about investments, they talked about real estate. And so when a few of those events of adversity happened that I shared at the beginning of our conversation, and I was wondering, well, what can I do that can produce some additional income and be my retirement nest egg, that I resorted back to my, I don't want to say habits, because I it's not like I had the habit of investing in real estate, but the all what I knew best, and that was real estate. So one day I stumbled across a seminar or a local meetup here in Los Angeles, and that was the second part, which is I was searching for the answer and I put that out there in the universe. So I stumbled across that, and it was one of those where they upsell you and whatnot. But part of the process was, hey, if you take the, we have a 3-day event where you can go deeper into what we're teaching. So I didn't hesitate for a moment. I took 2 days off work and went there and learned about single family homes, how to make the investment, how to evaluate it, things to consider. And I took copious notes and then I started implementing, going to other local meetups where I could meet other investors. And one of those meetups, one of them always talked about investing out of state. So, and he would always say, hey, if you have any questions, call me or reach out to me. And so I called him, I picked up the phone, called him, and I said, hey, I know you talk about investing out of state. I would like to get started. Do you know anyone who sells homes out of state? And sure enough, that person did. He said, well, I do. So we basically started the process of going through the listings that he had. And it was, I call it semi-turnkey type of product because he helped with a lot of the connecting me with local agents. He had a property management company, and I was just determined to make that decision. I didn't want to get caught up in analysis paralysis. So the market he was servicing was Memphis, and I had some familiarity with Memphis because I lived in the South for many years and I had visited the city before. So at that point, it was a no-brainer. I was like, okay, Memphis it is. That's where I'll get started. And so it was a combination of being intentional about it, taking action, not getting caught up in analysis paralysis, but also putting that heart and the desire out in the universe and looking for the answer on how can I make it happen.
Did you do an owner finance with this gentleman, or did you do the traditional bank loan? How did
It
you do?
was Yeah, it was a traditional bank loan, and he basically found the home. He was selling, he had a portfolio of homes or listings rather of homes that he would rehab and then eventually sell to long-term buy and hold investors. And my goal was to long-term hold it. I actually still do today. So yeah, that's how it all got started.
Wow. So it's still cash flowing, obviously, for you since you're still holding it. The
Yes.
appreciation on that must be unbelievable.
Huge, yes. I remember at the time, again, a lot of people were talking, that was back in 2017. So 2016, a lot of people were talking about the upcoming market crash. And I realized, you know what, I cannot really time the market, and it is my desire to hold this long term. So even if the market crashes, I'll just ride it out because the numbers worked. I'm glad I got in because the market never crashed. It kept growing from there. And yes, single family homes did have a slowdown shortly after COVID, but I'm glad I just focused on, hey, this is what I want to do. The numbers work. Let's move forward versus getting caught up in the hype. So, yes.
This is why I love real estate because, well, first of all, you have something. I'm a tactile person. I've got something I can walk up to and put my
Yeah.
hand on it and say, this is where my money is. This is value.
Yeah.
And obviously it depends on the market where you choose to invest, but to be able to know that I have something that I can literally just wait it out. As long as it's cash flowing, if you're renting your home and the market drops a bit, it doesn't mean that you've lost. Maybe on paper, it might
Right.
show you have net worth that's less.
Yeah.
But if it's cash flowing, just hang on to it, keep going. Just
Yeah.
keep
Yeah.
going as business as usual. And
Yeah.
I think people panic sometimes given misinformation and the panic that, oh, you're going to lose everything. Not necessarily if you buy it and you manage it right. And the
Yeah.
biggest thing is about managing it. With that being said, how did you manage a single fa family property? Because as we know, being in the multifamily arena, property management is key. And
Yes.
if you don't manage the property manager, they can just eat all your profits and you don't. Is it a single family home, correct?
Yes. Yeah,
So how do
correct.
you navigate that to make sure that you're still making cash flow, not just transferring all the cash flow to a property management?
Yeah, and I'm so happy that you asked this question because I think there is a big misconception out there that owning real estate and single family rentals in particular is passive. And I suppose it is passive income from a tax definition standpoint, but it's really not passive in terms of reality. And if you make it passive, then that's usually when you encounter challenges. And so in my case, with the property being out of state, of course, I am not self-managing that myself. I know some investors who manage remotely, but I had a full-time job, so it wasn't really, I didn't think that would be the most optimal route. So I did hire a third-party property management that I found through this contact. I flew into Memphis to go meet them, and we walked not only my property, but also other properties they manage. I got a good feeling. And once you ask a ton of questions as well, though no checklist is perfect, right? Because what I've also learned, not through this experience, but through my multifamily experience, oftentimes the people you talk to are the business development officers. So you have to be very careful to distinguish between, well, who is the actual person managing the property? Because oftentimes the business development officers will tell you what you want to hear, not necessarily what you need to hear. But in that case, I was working with the property manager directly, which helped. And once you take over the property, yes, in a sense, once it's up and running and stabilized, it is somewhat passive, but you do need to be involved in major decisions, track the market. Of course, you consult with them on rents. So when leases start coming due, you collectively decide, do we raise the rents? Do we keep them flat? What do we do? Because you also have to balance the vacancy with the rent increase, right? It's always a fine balance because vacancy is your biggest cost when you're running a property. And so monitoring the financials, believe it or not, mistakes do happen. So there have been more than one occasions where I would catch an expense that's there and only to realize it was a mistake. And usually then they would reverse it. But if you don't watch that, you wouldn't catch it. And over time, these mistakes, albeit innocent or not, they can add up, right? And or if you're not in tune with the market, how would you know that you are getting the most optimal rent, or you can push it further? There have been cases on the opposite spectrum where my PM was advising me to raise the rent, and what I was seeing in the market was the opposite, but I wouldn't have known that if I wasn't monitoring. So it is involved. You do have to monitor the local market, you do have to monitor the financials, and then when it comes to capital expenditures decisions, of course, you want to be involved. Any repairs, you want to be responsive, because if you don't take care of your residents, there is no incentive for them to stay. So some of those decisions you cannot let lag. But A lot of that came through experience, and I think my lending background also helped because I was seeing the other side of the equations, meaning a lot of investors, not necessarily in the single family space, but in multifamily, how they run and operate their property. So that gave me good insights into, okay, what are the things that I need to pay attention to as an operator?
And I love the fact that you're describing paying attention to the markets, because a lot of people that want to come into real estate, whether single family or multifamily, they're not really looking at a lot of the detail that really makes something successful. Staying on top of the market, even after you've already purchased, that way you're able to see, okay, rents are just kind of staying flat right now. And there are a lot of vacancies in these, maybe newer rehab. Are you looking on apartments.com? You could just scan the area, see what the apartments look like, do your comparisons and say, oh, look, this one's still being advertised 20 days later. Maybe that's not, and maybe the quality is the same, or maybe the quality is much higher. It's like, well, even with that and being just a slightly higher, they're not getting that rent, then I should stick with what I have and just keep going forward and see if we can just, it's like you said, it's better to have a tenant who's paying, who's always paid in there, creating cash flow, and then continue to evaluate the market rather than having a vacancy and then possibly coming in with a tenant that may not be paying on a consistent.
No, that's absolutely key. And one more point I want to make it the importance of visiting the market. Yes, you can manage remotely after, but there's so many. Just because you're in a certain zip code or city doesn't mean you're in the right part of the city. And I see a lot of investors, especially in this case, we're talking about the Memphis market. It's very street by street. And you see a property that looks great on paper and it's only 60,000 or 90,000. And for someone from California, where the average or median home price is a million, it's like, oh, wow, let me buy 10 of those, right? Then you realize it's in a location where you wouldn't dare set a foot in, and you probably cannot even find the property manager to manage this for you because it's not safe, or maybe the tenant base is rougher, and there's more repairs and turns involved. So you have to visit the local market, and if you can't travel for any reason, maybe have someone you trust do that and give you their third party unbiased feedback on the location, because the location can make or break a deal as well.
I love the fact that you just what you brought up around the street by street, because one of the things that people don't realize is that it depends on that location will determine what type of clientele is going to be drawn. So you can ask let's just make up something. You can ask $1,000 rent, but the clientele for that area, they can't afford it. So you're not going to get that. And you're not going to get somebody that has the income for that because of the area. So that is definitely key to take into effect. And talking to property managers ahead of time before you purchase something to get a feel for areas, and having someone that lives there, knows the area, that can tell you that's not a good street, one street over this street, you're going to come down sometimes $200 a month in rent. And people don't realize that. So thank you so much for pointing that out. That's fantastic. Wow. I really love that. And so from the single family, how did you transition? Did you just like jump into the large multifamily? Did you transition by buying a smaller joint venture or on your own multifamily? How did that work for you?
Yes, so my journey has been very incremental, right? I started with a single family home before I transitioned to a duplex. And then from a duplex, I jumped into an 11 unit. And so after I had a couple of homes, that's when the light bulb went on. And I realized, wow, this is not just some small retirement nest egg. This can be something bigger that can down the road potentially even replace at least part of or a significant portion of my W-2 income. And as I started doing the math and thinking, okay, well, if that's the case, how do I scale it? I realized, well, I'm gonna have to buy a ton of single family homes to get to the income level that would be at least somewhat comfortable, which would require a ton of time, or I could partner with other people and we can jointly buy larger buildings. I'll have a smaller share, but it will be a smaller share of a larger pie. And I had the lender background, so I could evaluate the risks and the downside, but I didn't necessarily have the investor background, which is usually looks at the upside or the potential. And that's when I realized before I take on any major change, I like to go deep down on education. So when I made the decision to make the transition into multifamily, the first step I took before even buying a property was to join a mastermind where I had the opportunity not only to learn the process through their educational platform, but also connect with other like-minded individuals and investors who are now my partners. And my first multifamily was a small joint venture, so 11 units. I started with that, and eventually you could say, graduated into syndications. So working on a larger 150 plus unit apartment buildings where I can add my expertise in terms of deal analysis, bringing additional capital to the deal and add value that way to the operator, while at the same time giving my passive investing partners opportunity to do what I do, but without having to be involved in the day-to-day operations, the monitoring of the investment, doing the diligence, doing the underwrite, at least to the level that I do. So it was very gradual and incremental, and at every stage, I took away the learnings that I can apply at the next level. And as I made the transition to syndications, I also invested passively because I wanted to get the perspective of what is it like to be a passive investor. So it did not happen overnight. And I tell people you have to be, it's a marathon, right? It's an endurance race. It's not a sprint. So it does take time, and but as long as you're consistent, persistent, and intentional, it is possible.
How much time did it take you to actually? So, did you invest as an LP first, what limited partner, or did you go in as a general partner first in the multifamily?
I guess chronologically it was the JV came first, and then the LP and GP investments came more or less around the same time. But yeah, the single families and the JVs, those were first, which is where I was learning, you could say, on my own dime. And then I started to partner with others actively and passively.
How did you vet your joint venture 11 unit partners?
It started very slow and organic was the process. It's with the mastermind that I was part of, I would always raise my hand in terms of, hey, this is what my superpowers are, and this is what I can help with. And naturally, that led to conversations with people in this group where we would evaluate deals together or work on deals together. And over time, you talk about the deal, but you also talk about other things where you get a sense of how they think, what their values are. There were in-person networking events organized by that group, so I attended those where I had the opportunity to also meet them in person. And so over time, we realized there is good alignment, not only in terms of skill set where we can complement one another, values, but also business goals and objectives. And so initially, when I first started in the space, I was focusing on finding deals. And so by the time I finally found a deal that appeared to work, I already had the team or my potential partners there, and I reached out to them when I had an actual deal, and we all decided to join hands because the timing and everything else aligned. So it definitely did not happen overnight. I'm not one of these people who would go to a conference and it's, hey, I like red. Me too. Let's partner together. It takes me a little bit longer, but I think that's important, right? Because you're getting into, I guess you could say, medium-term marriages
Yes.
with partners. And so it's important to ensure that you're aligned with someone that you enjoy working with, that, or maybe you like each other, but you have the exact same skill set. In that case, that may not be the best fit, because if we're both underwriters, who's going to bring the capital or who's going to run the asset, right? So
Right.
So you also have to take that into consideration. But yeah, it's been a slow process for me, but I'm grateful because at least on the active side, at least the partnerships that I've been in have been great, and we've done other deals together subsequently.
So, well, obviously it's working to your benefit to go slow because you're no longer in your W-2, that is correct. And you're
That is
now full
correct.
time into real estate. When did you make that actual transition? And how did that, tell me about like the emotional decision around that, because that's a little scary to do.
It was very emotional, I tell you. July 22nd, 9 a.m., I walked into my office and I was supposed to have a meeting with my then manager. And I walked into the meeting and I was told our department is getting shut down. And I had 30 minutes to vacate the building and turn in. My badge was going to be turned off. So
Ouch.
that's not how I expected my journey to land. But something similar had happened within the firm that I worked with, where I saw 70% of the workforce was cut at the time. And that was my wake up moment. What happens if that happens to me? Because probably the only reason I was spared at the time was because I wasn't as paid as high enough. Usually these are cost-based decisions, right? Not talent-based decisions. That's when I doubled down on real estate. And so when that moment arrived, and unfortunately it happened to me, and I had very brief time to say goodbye to my, at least the colleagues who happened to be in the office. Others were traveling and I never got to say goodbye to them in person. I had the option at that time to either stay in the corporate world or become an entrepreneur. But being an entrepreneur was always my goal, and I was working towards that. But that decision, the universe decided maybe I needed that gentle push to make it because I always like to add cushion and buffers and this and that. And maybe, okay, in 5 years, I'll decide. So that decision was basically made for me in a way. And I realized, well, if I'm planning to do it anyway, now is the time to do it. And as I evaluated the downside, it was okay, well, if I fail miserably as an entrepreneur, then I'll go back and get a job, some job. So at least I'll be able to pay the bills. And if that is really the worst case scenario, I have to move forward because I don't want to look back 10 or 20 years from now with regret and think, wow, I really should have started this earlier. But again, I was prepared. If I wasn't prepared, I would not have made that decision. One, I had the passive and active investments that were generating cash flow for me to cover basic living expenses, right? Definitely had to make adjustments, which wasn't very difficult for me because I don't live a very lavish lifestyle. I don't live beyond my means. And I also had a ton of savings that I knew could carry me forward for 2+ years, not accounting for the cash flow. So I had a big buffer. If I did not have that, I probably would have been forced down a single path, which is get a corporate job, start with very minimal vacation days, and start a new rat race. So it was a very emotional decision. It wasn't easy. That first week, all I prayed for was health, good health, because I knew I can't afford to get sick. Good health and guidance. A lot of guidance. I'm religious, so I'm sharing something more personal here, but I pray to God for guidance, and I kid you not, he gave me the sign every single day. That first week I was getting a sign, and then I knew in my heart what the decision was. I talked to my family because they depend on me, so we all agreed, okay, it's take the risk, and I'm very grateful for their support. And so that's how it all happened, not the way I originally envisioned it, but I'm grateful for that gift. And again, it's one of those moments of why is this happening for me and not to me type of situations.
I totally agree with you on that. And I too am, I'm a very spiritual person. And I agree, you know, when we start really desiring something, it's going to come into our life, and not necessarily when we think it's the time, but when it is the time. And it is, like you said, in that moment, it's that moment Do we take this opportunity or do we let it pass? When will it come again? When will we be open enough to have it come again? Because it's always there. It's just, are we seeing it? You know, like almost like having your keys in your hand and you can't find them anywhere. Or, you know, I'm notorious for having my glasses on top of my head and can't find them anywhere. So the same sort of thing. And I love the fact that I'm getting this right. It's dream, believe, achieve is your business that you started from that. It's just beautiful. It just all comes together. That must have just like popped right into your head when you were doing this.
It definitely did. I was searching what would be the right name for the company, and it just embodies what I believe in and what I want to instill in others, which is having goals and dreams and a powerful why behind them, believing in yourself, surrounding yourself with like-minded positive individuals, and then achieve is for taking action, right? None of this will happen if these goals and dreams will be just up there in the clouds if we don't take action. So you have to do the work, right? It's not easy, but you have to take at least that first step. Take that first step and then the next one. And gradually, when you look back, you realize how far you've gone.
Now, we touched on something that's not easy to talk about that I think particularly, you know, it's something that because of social media, it's really easy to build up a presence and that is not really what's really behind the scenes. And you had shared a little bit of a difficulty. And the reason I want to talk about this is because clearly you are really savvy with numbers. You're a very savvy individual. You do not make impulsive decisions. Tell us about, you know, your limited partner. Was it, how's that journey going for you in your investment in is it going well? Like how you had like a little difficulty there. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, happy to share. And hopefully my pain will turn into someone else's gain, right? And that's because that's how we also learn. It's through experiences of others. And so yes, that was a deal that I have been passively invested in. And it was not in multifamily, it was a different asset class because one of my goals with my passive portfolio is to add some diversification so I wouldn't be 100% concentrated in stable value add multifamily in the southeast, which is what I focus on the active side, and that's the lane I play in. And so that was a different asset class, but it met my own investment objectives, which was cash flow. And at the time, I was working W-2, so it was basically buying a certain type of equipment, so I was benefiting from the depreciation. And by the time you sell it, it loses its value. So unlike multifamily, where you're bringing the value up, there you are pretty much selling it at a loss. So the offset with the depreciation recapture was going to result in a very minimal or potentially no tax liability. So between the cash flow and the tax structure, that was an attractive investment for me. And so, yes, I found out about it through a local contact. I had again met at a meetup slash networking event, and I thought I had done all my diligence, right, and asking all the questions on the checklist, talking to other investors who had participated in that type of investment. In my case, I invested with a through a fund, which fund invested with the operator, and so everything was checking out. The operator was someone with 10 plus years of experience, weathered multiple recessions. That particular investment had performed well even during those recessions in terms of cash flow and ability to distribute to investors. Everything just checked out. And then one day I got an email saying, "Hey, we're gonna change your distributions from monthly to quarterly. Here is why." And when they listed the reasons why, my stomach twisted because that's when I knew, okay, this is not right. And without going into too much detail, I reached out to the sponsor, and that's when I realized, wow, they have no idea what's going on. And I realized they didn't even have the latest financials. So there were a lot of lessons learned from that experience, which was Don't assume that just because someone is well recognized publicly, they are doing the deep diligence that all of us, whether we're active or passive investors, should be doing and verify the information, right? So in my case, what I know now and what I should have asked differently is, even though we knew that person, it's asking for copies of the financials that they're receiving to monitor the investment. Again, there was none, is what I found out. It's like, how can you be raising capital for a deal and not monitoring its performance? So that was one. And don't rely so much on social media. Just because someone is there doesn't mean that they necessarily have the financial and accounting acumen to read and understand the financial statement, let alone monitor that and realize what the risks are of an investment. So that was one. And then I guess if something is too good to be true, it's probably not true. Again, that one is really hard because I really leaned in on the track record. I really leaned in on the references. Everything just checked out perfectly. But in this case, now we're learning that this is most likely going to be declared as fraud. So I don't know how I could have necessarily controlled for that, but I suppose bad people are everywhere. And even doing background investigations, very similar to the Bernie Madoff story, that would not have necessarily revealed anything negative, right? Bernie passed what, three SEC audits and still didn't get caught. But what happened was, it was during the downturn that the domino crumbled. And that's exactly what happened in this particular deal. It was during this latest downturn that the house of cards collapsed and then everything got exposed. And I had that gut feeling before making my third investment into that deal. I was hesitating, but then I decided, let me move forward. It was better use of my money versus sitting it in a bank towards, higher return. And again, I needed the cash flow at the time, and but I had that gut feeling. So it's learning, don't ignore that gut feeling when you have it. And sometimes it's what I've learned is sometimes it's better to pass and lose on an amazing deal than get yourself in a really bad deal, because now you have to effectively find an investment with double the returns just to break even and make up for the loss. So I can keep going on and on, but again, as I reflected on this, it's easy to point fingers outward and not look at the three fingers pointing back at you, right? So I chose to focus on the three fingers pointing back at me and realize, okay, as an LP, you really don't control the circumstances, right? You're not the decision maker, you don't vote. What is it that I can take away and learn and apply not only in future passive investments, because I'm not going to let this one setback change the route of my journey. I'll continue investing, and I believe in the power of passive investing. But what is it that I can learn both as an LP, but also as an active operator, a syndicator, a fund manager, right? What is it that I can learn so I can be a better lead sponsor and an even better steward for my investors' money? So that's what I chose to focus on, but it hurts both financially and emotionally. And but I suppose that's how we best learn. It's from those seminars. And I'm also grateful that it came in earlier in my journey versus later, so I can again apply those lessons learned into future active or passive investments.
Yeah, I think that just hearing you talk about it, I think a lot of people need to hear that it happens to anyone, that it's not that you're just uneducated. Things can go through, things can be presented in a way that you can't really tell what's up from down. And you can only go with the information that you have. And then based upon experience, any property in real estate, whether it's single family, multifamily, and or any investment actually. They all have a generalized way of looking at them, but each individual one, like particularly in real estate, we'll stay focused on that. Each property is different. No two properties are the same. Different tenant base. You'll have different demographics. You'll have a different property manager. It's a people business. It's no two people are alike. So you have to take that into consideration And with whatever knowledge you have, make your best informed decision. And like I have to say, hats off to you to be able to. It's not fun. It's not easy what you're experiencing right now, but definitely looking at it, all right, how can I learn from this and move on? How can I make this something that I can improve my life in the future and help others in a way that they are not going to be maybe experiencing this or minimize that effect? Because we're not in control of, like you said, there's a lot of things when we go into these investments, we're not in control as a limited partner. And we just have to sit back and trust those that are running it. So, thank you for sharing and being vulnerable in that and being honest around that. I think it's going to be very helpful to a lot of people and also those that might be suffering right now at the same time. They're just thinking, how did I get myself into this? It's pretty easy to do that.
Absolutely. Yes. It's yes. And we often trust, but it's, I guess, the verify component. And that's why I'm also very vocal about it, right? Because passive investing is not truly passive. And I see so many people get into it with the social effect. Oh, my friend invested in, they had a great experience. It's like your friend's investment goals and risk tolerance may be different than yours. Just because other people are flocking to do something doesn't mean you should do it. And I get it, a lot of people are looking for that easy button. Nobody wants to plow through a 200-page private placement memorandum, right? And read that. Nobody wants to plow through tons of spreadsheet numbers, but we have fiduciary responsibility to ourselves as well as investors, whether active or passive, and especially when active, also to our passive investing partners. But you have to do the work. And if you're not ready, or if you don't feel like you fully understand it, don't do it. Wait, get educated, and then jump into a deal. And I feel like a lot of people are also getting caught up in that because everyone wants the dream, but the piña colada beach person that I maybe they're somewhere, I don't know. But being passive also involves some work, and again, it's the education, the d diligence you do on the front end, but also monitoring your investment, right? You're not making day-to-day decisions, you're not doing the heavy lifting, sure, but at least monitor it so you know how things are going and if or when things go bad, because problems inevitably always arise. I'm yet to see a deal that was so smooth without any challenges, right? So at least you, it won't come as a surprise, and you can plan accordingly because that does impact everyone's personal situation. But yeah, I very firmly believe in investors being educated and empowered, which is also why I create a ton of content around it. And again, the goal is to help others, so hopefully they can minimize the risk, because you cannot eliminate the risk. That's another thing. A lot of people, and I hear a lot of chatter now with, certain deals not performing as well, and it's they expect to be made whole. That's, I get it. I've lost money too, and I'd love to be made whole, but it's also an investment, right? When you lose money in the stock market, you don't go knock on the CEO's door of whatever public company you invested in and say, "Hey, make me whole." Like, so it's important to understand that we are, as investors, taking risk. And along those lines, very often, some of the deals with the highest returns, yes, it means that the return is higher because you need to be appropriately compensated for that risk. But you should also, people should also consider that the higher the risk, the higher the probability of loss as well. So you gotta walk into it with eyes wide open and understand, hey, real estate does not always go up forever. The stock market doesn't always go up forever. There are ups and downs. So that's why being able to really monitoring, understanding your personal cash flow situation, your personal balance sheet is key. So then you can decide, okay, if I lose 100% of that, am I okay with that? And if the answer is no, then wait until you can stomach the loss, because unfortunately it happens. It's not a, I wish I could tell you it's rainbows and butterflies all the time, but unfortunately those events will happen. But as long as over time you're in the positive, then it makes it worthwhile, at least financially.
I love how you pointed out that passive income really isn't passive. And it's only passive in the sense of the amount of time exchanged for the money. And it's really kind of an overused word, I think, now, the passive income. And the definition for the passive income, if you really like look at it at a financial perspective, it's really about how you're taxed. It has to do with that. Ordinary income, which is what when we get a W-2, we get all the Social Security and everything taken out. And passive income isn't taxed as high. And that's really the difference. And it's not about just kicking back with the margaritas on the beach, like you were mentioning. It's not. And I think that's something that I think once people get into it, they start to realize that, yeah. I mean, if you want to go, even you do have to do some kind of due diligence, even if you're going to be doing something like what most people will see as the only option for investing is like in the stock market. You don't just randomly just open something up or brokerage and say, just throw my money anywhere. You do have to do some due diligence. So, yeah, education is key. You have been the power of example on that. We have run out of time, but before we go, please tell our listeners where they can get in touch with you. And this will be in the show notes and on the website so people will be able to reach out to you.
Yeah, the easiest way to connect with me is through my site, dbacapitalgroup.com. D as in dream, B as in believe, A as in achieve. My contact information is there. People can hop on my calendar and has a ton of complimentary educational resources. And for those who are looking to learn how to underwrite apartment buildings, they can go to masteringmultifamilyunderwriting.com and again connect with me there, or just enjoy the complimentary educational resources there as well.
And do you have any other social media sites that you're on?
The one that I'm most active in is LinkedIn. I have a Facebook and Instagram account, but Instagram is relatively new, so LinkedIn is probably where they can most easily connect with me, check messages and posts, so everything.
Oh, excellent. I just want to thank you so much for being on and being so transparent. I think this is just really a beautiful way and a beautiful story of your life of how. Just doing the work, seeing, having higher education growing within, and then the exterior grows with you. Opportunity comes as we grow internally. So I want to thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that. And I really enjoyed this podcast interview tremendously. I want to thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I hope it added value to the audience and they can take away at least one golden nugget so they can walk away as one notch higher of educated and empowered investors, as educated and empowered investors.
Well, if they didn't, then they weren't listening. Oh, wow. Thank you again. So, thank everyone, our listeners. I really appreciate you all being here. And remember, do something today that your future self will thank you for. And we'll see you next time. Have a great day.
You alone possess the power to manifest your desires. You are the genie in the bottle, awaiting your command. So ask smart questions. We're not licensed financial pros, so be sure to consult with a licensed professional, attorney, or tax consultant.